Good evening, all. Welcome on in to the 24th episode of the Wide World of Wargaming Warhammer 40,000 segment. As always, I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me, as always, Mr. Michael Schwartz.
Good evening, everyone.
And Mr. Alexander Gonzalez.
Hello, hello.
Sirs, how are we this weekend? What 40K related shenanigans have we been up to recently?
I've been busy building up my Raptor Space Marine Brigade. I don't know how good it'll be in the competitive meta, but it does have a lot of shooting, so I need to get those bad boys painted up for a upcoming GT, and then maybe I'll cry in the podcast as I go 2 and 3. But we'll see.
I'm sorry, a Raptor as in Chaos Raptors list?
No, it's a Space Marine. It's a Space Marine chapter.
So basically, I'm using them as Raven Guard.
Got it.
Raptors are like camo, are like essentially the only smart ones that they're camo colors for their freaking power armor. So since I'm using infiltrators and I'm using the Phobos armor.
They're the only Space Marines that actually use camo, so it's fluffy for him to use the Phobos armor, which is stealth armor.
Exactly.
Right. I remember us talking about that. It was kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, it is. And then I myself I utilized a scheme for marbling technique, which I was a little too crazy with, went a little too heavy with. So the marbling was a lot more black marble than white marble. So I redid a bunch of that, and we're not quite done. I'll post a tutorial when all is said and done on my end, but it's going to be a few weeks till I finish it. But I started repainting the armor plates on a Seraptech heavy construct. Not because I necessarily think it's going to be a great list to bring, but just because I want to bring it again. I want to just bring it and two pylons and then like a battalion, because I know I can fit that. And just be like, yeah, have fun.
I myself am doing research on lists, looking at what are the most effective ways to bring as many Lehman Russes as possible. After our conversation with Mr. Jim Vassal, who we do give our thoughts and prayers to, as he did suffer a very significant loss of army recently. To whoever that scumbag was, I hope we find you and do very serious injury to you before handing you over to the police. I would very much like to run at minimum double spearhead battalion, but I don't know if that's going to be possible with the points. But that is what I'm working on at the moment. We are going to talk tonight about one event above all others, only because it combines both a very competitive event with a lot of top names and, unfortunately, more than a little bit of controversy. This is the Flying Monkey Con Warhammer 40K Championship, won by a Mr. Trainor Wolf, running kind of the new hotness, which is the Monster Mash Chaos list, bringing a little bit of everybody's stuff. The triple Discordant that a lot of people are favoring, the double Contemptor Dreadnought that Jim Vassal did make famous, only he's running it with Butcher Cannons, not C-beams. But other than that, two 10-man horror units, and then a big 30-block of Plague Bearers, 27 had Plague Bearers, but it's essentially 30. I asked him last week, and he kind of, with all due fairness, he's allowed to, he kind of demurred if when we asked him if Chaos was kind of better than people thought, you know, and it's probably him just protecting the trade secrets. I'm sure, as we all know, Chaos players can be a bit insular, and what do we think of this? It looks like another one of those lists where it doesn't matter how much little shooting you bring, it doesn't do anything. Here's my 5 dreadnoughts with a whole bunch of characters behind them, and then the 3 Lord Discordants, which are just monsters.
Well, this is a massively different list than Jim's, for the record.
100%.
Yeah, this one's all about target saturation, because we've obviously been over the Lord Discordants on more than one occasion, and they are terrifying by themselves, let alone what they can do for Hellforge things nearby. So, you know, it's going to be pretty helpful for any type of Chaos player to bring multiple Lord Discordants, if at all you're going to bring the amount of heavy amount of vehicles. And of course, yeah, 3 Dorito Dreadnoughts, and that alone is going to be a good combo. And then you add those Hellforge Contemptors, you know, double Butcher Cannon. We don't exactly have it's not comparable to Jim's Contemptors, and it's arguable whether or not that's the most effective choice. But I mean, it worked out for him in this, you know, in his matchup.
It's also a lot of firepower. You're talking about 8 shots, strength 8, minus 1 AP, 2 damage each. It will do work. But yeah, the sea beams are just have that longer range that Jim alluded to that works in his favor. But it's just with 5 of them,
sure.
That's a truck ton of DACA. That's like, what is, yeah.
True. And in this case too, you know, when Jim was talking about the sea beam contemptors rather than butcher cannon, that was also pretty much the only long range support he had in his entire army. You know, with this current list, you look at those 3 Dorito dreadnoughts. That is a huge amount of firepower. So really, I guess you don't really need to rely at all on sea beams,
right?
If you have
plus,
that much firepower.
I do like the fact that all the Hellforged Doritos and Contemptors are part of the Purge, because that has a stratagem that allows him to shoot essentially into close combat. But these guys get tied up. For people who don't know, that's a special stratagem of the Purge. But of course, yeah.
Oh yeah,
so,
we went over that a couple episodes
Don Houston. I always mispronounce his name. But anyway, yeah, thank you. He really likes
Don Houston's
Legion because of that special stratagem, because it's the common attempt to tie down close shooting. Sorry, the common. Oh, you're right.
It's not
the
Legion.
The Renegade chapter. My apologies.
Really, wow. Alex? Really?
Just saying.
Everyone, they're brought to you by Alexander Gonzalez. Your actually moment of the episode.
The point being is, it's a really good stratagem that allows you to keep on shooting even when you're tied down in CC, which is the kiss of death for all these shooty units that can't just fly away.
And then you have, you know, probably the new hotness is the triple discordant with the Soulforged pack, basically where all of them are moving. They move 14 normally, so with the extra bonus, assuming one of them is his warlord, they're moving 16 inches at a time, and then any one of them can advance and charge. So do your math on that. What is 22 technically possible, a 34-inch charge?
That is a terrifying threat range. I'm sorry, you can do what? Yes, I can charge across the board.
Yep, and one of his discordants is his warlord. It is marked very clearly on his list.
I mean, mamma mia. Discordants are so good. What? I'm excited. I'm so excited. I'm Italian version excited.
We were not wrong when we said Lord Discordants were going to remake this game. Yeah. I'll put it that way. Other than that, you know, you have your Demon Princes, your Brimstone Horrors, your 26 Plague Bearers to just gum up the works, and then a couple support characters. You know, not a lot. It's simple. It's a very simple list. Just whatever, a couple things focus. You have a couple of your dreadnoughts focusing down targets at a time. You have your Lord Discordant soaking up the fire, and then you have your whores and your plague bearers grabbing objectives and gumming up anything that gets in their way.
I mean, what's crazy is this is the post night meta, right? Because when the freaking Castellan was like around.
You would never bring this many dreadnoughts with a Castellan in the game.
It's like it would kill 2 per turn.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, wow.
Me and Schwartz actually talked about the second place guys list, and we're kind of impressed by it. Nicholas Weiss bringing Tau, triple battalion, no broadsides, no crisis suits, no hammerheads, no devilfish, nothing. He had 4 types of units in his army: characters, fire warriors, drones, and riptides. And I adore it.
It's simplicity at its finest.
This is the kind of list that I always expected the current iteration of Tau to result in, because I've, for the longest time, and you guys know this, have said rank and file fire warriors with proper support, assuming you can keep them alive, are some of the most efficient output in the game, because they can wound everything on 5s. Literally, there is nothing in this game that is not from Apocalypse. Or, you know, for whatever we're calling Forge World these days, that they cannot wound on 5s. And with Cadre Fireblades, they're getting 2
and
shots,
plus
3 the closer you get.
Yeah, I mean, they're very useful. Yeah.
Plus Darkstrider is going to help them with the +1 to wound. Well, one unit.
Right. One unit is – that's the only thing is I kind of wish he had maybe put a few more into the Fire Warriors, but this is basically as minimalistic as he can get to get those three Riptides and his – count them, boys – 26 shield drones.
Oh boy, let me tell you, man.
9 by 8, 9 by 9, 8 and 9. I love everything about it.
Last time I fought against a Tau player, guy was really nice about it, but you know that like 5+ shrug save they have. This guy couldn't like fail a 4+ save against like all my barrage of Tesla, because I'm like, haha, 50% chance, like I'm going to be down in hella drones. And then I like just killed no drones in one turn. And he just looked at me, and before he even had his turn, he's like, you want me to buy you a drink? Oh. And I'm just like,
oh,
you know, cause, oh, cause like this won't end well for you. If you killed that's zero bad. Drones with your entire army.
Yeah, that's bad.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, what more do we need to say about trip tied with burst cannons, ATSs, and velocity trackers. VTs probably for Eldar flyer spam now, you think?
Yeah,
not,
probably.
Not Eldar flyer spam, everything flyer spam.
Everything fly spam, yeah, basically.
Oh, yeah. Because the new hotness, the Custodes tanks are also fly.
Yes, the Caladius, yes, yeah. They are.
And he brought a Cold Star, which is pretty cool. Other than that, Shadow Sun, and 1, 2, 3 Fire Blades. So essentially, he's just putting one behind each group of 15 Fire Warriors and going, come at me, bro.
Yeah, dude, that's a truck ton of firepower starting at 30 inches. Oh, God.
Yeah. It is interesting that Tau being kind of one of the two or three best mid-range shooting armies, I would say Marines and Necrons being, you know, two of the other ones that are really good there. Eldar, obviously, but we don't count them.
No.
Would you guys like to see Tau move more in an infantry-heavy direction?
Honestly, I just like the fact that they have the availability to do both, you know? You want to do mech-heavy? You super into, like, Gundam Wing and all that other stuff? You know, you got your Crunchyroll account and, you know, you got that whole thing going on for you. You know, good on you, man. Like, relive your, like, Evangelion.
Hey, I'm reliving it right now.
Bring a bunch of Riptides and stuff, but like,
sorry, it's Anime Planet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So like, you know, if you want to do that, do that. If you want to like pretend like, you know, you are actually showing the equivalent of just like some weird gun line, then like a bunch of like infantry with good guns, actually, like hell yeah, have at it, man. Like, bring that infantry heavy.
Do you want to play Imperial Guard with actually decent personal weapons?
Yeah, do you want to play Imperial Guard and not wound everything on 5s and 6s?
Oh my God.
Boom.
And last but not least, we want to give a shout out to Ben Neal bringing the I can't believe I'm saying this.
Bad.
Ultramarines with Vitrix Guard veteran spam.
Oh my Lord.
The things that none of us thought we would ever say out loud. Yeah. But let's also be clear, he did bring Golemon. So, like, what else do we need to say here? Hey, do you like missing? No? Good. Here's 400 points.
I mean, what surprised me is this sheer lack of firepower in this army. For those who can't see the list, he's bringing Tiggy, 3 scout squads. Admittedly, those are packing sniper rifles, but those are MSU. Another Libby, 2... Is that 10-man Space Marine veteran squads just with chain swords and storm shields?
5 of them have storm shields. 2 of them are double chain swords.
3 of them have thunder
hammers. 2 of them have thunder hammers.
Oh,
and that's
my
2
Lord.
Squads. And 2 squads of those bad boys.
Oh, yeah.
Plus Vitrix Guard.
Yeah.
Plus freaking scout. How does he shoot things with this? I'm confused. Oh, my God.
Honestly, man, he just walks forward. He just that's what this list is, dude. He just walks forward. Like, it's pressure. I really don't know how we played this list. I would have killed to have this be on stream. He might have been abusing ITC boxes, especially,
yeah,
you know.
That's true.
But, you know, I really don't know how you play this list.
I mean, because it's Vanguard veterans.
I got nothing here, man.
Deep strike without their drop. I mean, their jumps. No, they can't. They're Ultramarines, so they can't infiltrate. I mean, I'm struggling to see how he made this work. I mean, he's basically walking a freaking he's foot slogging an elite army board. I'm just like amazed. Kudos to you, sir. Kudos. Oh, really?
Oh no, they do have jump packs. Shorts, they do. They've got.
Oh, my apologies, at the top people. Level. I'm moronic.
It's a weird,
yes, now
it's a weird format, but they do have jump packs.
Oh yeah, you know, he deep strikes 500 points.
That,
makes, for
that takes a lot of the mystery out of this list.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that makes a lot more sense. Because sorry, the format we're viewing this information on, I couldn't see the jump packs, and I'm just like, what is going on? Ah, well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, we should give a shout out to our friend over on the Age of Sigmar podcast.
Oh, they're
Jeremy
so good.
Vessier, for saying that Vitrix Guard at some point he thought was going to come good. There are rumors of Marines being close on the horizon, and you know, if this starts to work on a wider scale, whatever way you feel Ultramarines might end up coming back towards the top, as we all know they would eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be really surprised if they came out with a Codex, man. Like, I think that they're going to do a lot more of the
I mean, you might be right, Alex. Because they only come out with a couple new kits, and so like essentially with a campaign, but add the data sheets for the Eliminators, the Infiltrators, all that good stuff officially with different weapon options, and then release the box sets for like $40 a pop for each of the new different units. Definitely not.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much effort on their part.
I would be really curious to see what the missions were for this event, because you don't really see a lot of heavy jump pack lists without Smash Captains. And there aren't any in this. Obviously, there aren't any in this list. He's got one Dreadnought, a Thunderfire Cannon, a 3-man bike squad, Gulliman, 20 veterans, and then 15 scouts, right? With a couple characters to back it up. Like, yeah, I mean, it's cool. I like I said, hands off. I just have no fucking idea how he did it.
I'm just looking at this brigade list, and he's got 600 points in elites for Space Marines. So I'm just like, oh,
yeah,
God, that is never a sign.
Like, he ran a Vanguard detachment out of Space Marines. I don't think I've ever seen that in a top three.
No, that seems very strange.
Well, we need to find this man and interview him and learn his secrets.
We must discover this man and find out what.
If he's listening to this, we would love to hear his take on it.
Ben Neal.
Yes, Ben Neal. This is a standing invitation. Please come on the show. We want to know how you performed this minor miracle. All right.
I mean, he's probably just going to respond with Gulliman. End of question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I brought Bobby G. You man. All right. And now, unfortunately, we must get to the part of the show that we have to talk about, only because of how forceful some of us, and I fully include myself, have been regarding conduct. As many of you may know, some of you may not, a member of Team 40K United, whose name we will not specify, it is out there. If you would like to know, go ahead and look at the Flying Monkeys Con Facebook page. They have issued a full statement on what happened. A player from 40K United was disqualified after I believe it's three yellow cards gets you a DQ, and then was asked to leave the event after he decided to get in the face of one of the people who called a judge on him. We all know that in this hobby there are people, and I include myself in this, as people who have to work on their temper. I mean, what do you even say here? Like, this is the kind of stuff we thought we were past, right? We haven't really had a major personal controversy since last year. There have been, list questions and maybe rule questions on stream. Maybe, small stuff that you would understand, or just people giving automated yellow cards, like we said two weeks ago, for not having your list in on time. And a friend of ours had this happen to him, actually, and he was perfectly fine with it. Yep. He's like, yeah, I accept this. But like getting in the face of other players after you've been thrown out of an event, but asked for permission to stay and support your team, and then which causes your team to walk.
It's not a good look.
I don't know where to go with that one. I don't know where to go with that one.
Can I make a statement?
No, Schwartz, you're not allowed to talk.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
All right, go ahead. Did you raise your hand though?
Yeah, I did raise my hand.
Okay, good.
My hand is currently raised. I don't know if you can see it from like 500 miles away.
What, 500? Don't you mean like 20?
Well, I was referring to like Alex, but sure.
Okay. I think it's further than that.
Probably, actually. Anyway. So there's always going to be an unfortunate circumstance. Also, people can have like shitty days, and sometimes you're just like not in the right frame of mind to be at your best and most civil and most socially acceptable. I do like the fact that they have this system and that they enforced it to the point where they did ask a person to leave. Because as some individuals can recall, a few years ago at this point, you would have these unfortunate situations and it seemed like very little was being done about it.
Yeah.
Now you have what appears to be this organic system in place that seems to be growing with yellow cards, penalties, and eventually expulsions, depending on whether or not the behavior is deemed to go that far. I think there's a reason why every other sport or social form of interaction has codes of conduct, even after years or decades of play. I mean, it's a reason why you have still three referees and freaking basketball courts in the NBA, because sometimes shit's going to happen. I'm glad to see it was enforced. It's unfortunate it happened. It is a hobby that we all enjoy, and Lord knows we're not doing it to become millionaires.
Well, not all of us.
And so it's unfortunate to see it happen, but I guess the positive result was that the rules were enforced and then an official press release was made out. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does great credit to Flying Monkeys that they got out ahead of this.
Yeah.
And just laid it all, not unlike the London GT did a couple of years ago, where they just said, look, this is what happened. This is the steps that were taken. This is the result. This is what we did after that. Anyone, you know, with something to say, please feel free. We look to make this event better. But these are the decisions we made, and we're standing by them. And that's the kind of, you know, spine that it takes to run a major event. Like Flying Monkeys, I think, had 80 people. Like, that's not a small tournament. That's a major. That means that this is going to have an outcome on who wins best in ITC. That means this is going to have an effect on price, on cash money, right? And as I have said a lot of times, TOs have an obligation to maintain the integrity of their event as someone receiving money. Like, whether you profit or not is irrelevant. You're taking people's money. You have an obligation to run an event at the highest level of integrity possible.
And that's really important. And I really do appreciate that they did put this statement out here, you know, and just like you guys have both referenced, like, you know, gone are the dark ages where people will just get away with practically anything and just cause more of a fervor with the players, but no real repercussions, you know. And I appreciate this. I think that this is really important. It alone, you know, can help change the attitude of the community, because then, you know, nobody wants to become that guy who becomes popular for that weekend because of a singular issue.
Yeah. You mean famous? So, yeah.
You know, I think that it's helpful on multiple levels, but, you know, it's just unfortunate to see all this. And it's funny when we start talking about codes of conduct, with this latest General's Handbook for Age of Sigmar, the very first page of General's Handbook, which is just chapter proof, but for AOS, they literally have a code of conduct on the first page.
Right.
And it's like, this is how you don't act like a shithead when you play a war game. And honestly, They should just copy and paste it instead of putting a Stormcast, put a fucking Space Marine neck on the page and make that exact same copy paste code of conduct for 40K in the next chapter approved. It's just stuff like, you know, don't get aggressive, have all your materials with you, don't pick up your, you know, your successes, like, you know, pick up your faileds only kind of thing. You know, don't get argumentative, don't get aggro, you know, shit like that.
Just, you know, the kind of stuff that all of us should know better. I mean, the majority of people in this hobby are adults. I can't speak for myself though. But in the one thing that's been brought up out of this, and I think it's a decent question. You guys know me. I am as hang 'em high as you can get. I am fully in the, if not zero tolerance, almost zero tolerance policy. Do we need to go, do TOs have an obligation to not only release DQs, but any yellow cards that they hand out? Because I know for a fact, Schwartz, you're a basketball fan. You're familiar with how the technical foul rules work?
Yes, sir.
Where once you acquire a certain number of techs over a certain amount of time, you're suspended for a certain amount of time?
Exactly. In the playoffs in particular, it is 7.
Right. It's 7, right?
Yeah. 7 technical fouls will get you eliminated. Will get you.
So it's a one-game suspension.
One-game suspension, which some people have argued that's, if anything, that's a little too light. But it has come up in the past where it's been, for example, the Golden State Warriors when they
Good. I hate you right now.
What?
I didn't want to have to relive 2016. I hate you so much.
Oh my God, get over it. move on. They've won 3 championships. Life's good. Anyway, they lost in part in 2016 due to the fact that Draymond Green got suspended halfway through the finals because of his technical fouls.
It was a bullshit tech.
We're not here to have this conversation today.
Be that as it may. Yeah, seriously. Be that as it may, the system worked because it essentially enforced the aspect that technicals and poor sportsmanship and things that were out of line would not be tolerated and would be punished.
Yeah, I mean, how do you guys feel about a standing list of yellows? Because one of the questions that has come up about that, and it's a really fucking cynical question, and I hate even putting it out there, but some people are worried that it opens up controversial players to being abused by other players, right? Like anything that could even remotely be seen as worthy of a yellow card, people would have to stay away from just in order to avoid getting thrown out, right? I mean, it's kind of an allowance for shitty behavior in that way, but it's also a human allowance, right?
While I agree with your list and it'll take a lot of centralization for that to occur. And I think we're a few years away from that happening. If ever, because realistically part of the beauty of the 40K hobby is the diversity of tournaments and their independence from each other. But at the same time, with a quasi, let's call it, oh boy, how can I use this word without sounding horrible? Some sort of union.
Governing body.
Yeah, a loose union of exactly, a governing body, but nothing that's heavily enforced. Something like that. Yeah, but that's going to
take... Which we know exists. I mean, we know that 40K Illuminati is real. No, I'm serious. Come on. All of us know people who were in it, for fuck's sake.
Here we go.
No, I'm not trying to be controversial about that. We know there is a Facebook group where the majority of TOs are members and they discuss stuff like this.
Yeah.
This isn't the fucking Trilateral Commission I'm talking about here, guys.
For me, I think we're still years away from that sort of centralized system, even if it's just a council of TOs to enforce a yellow card standing list.
Well, you know, this is something that's not super, uncommon among, as you guys mentioned earlier, other game systems I mean, Magic has a system like this. That's it's true. Been around. It's been successful for years, you know, having a simple ban list, having, you know, whether it be players or cards and stuff like that. And, you know, it's worked for them. It's worked well for them, you know. So when these type of situations occur, I think that it's important to listen to your player base too, you know. The player base has gotten, dare I say, unforgiving.
A lot more. Since people agreed to start doing something about it, the tolerance level for it has dropped precipitously. You know, like as soon as people stopped playing the, oh, we'll let it ride this time, or yeah, we'll just, you know, let him get away with no prize support or whatever. When their consequences started becoming real, it really hardened the attitudes of a lot of people.
Yeah. But
and also, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you've also seen, I think, this rise in demand for accountability has also come in time when people are traveling more for GTs and major events. People are more people are committing far more money into this hobby than previously, which is understandable. Like I said, it's a hobby. If you're pouring thousands of dollars, you want to enjoy your experience. You want accountability to ensure that that experience is enjoyable and you don't have bad actors, bad apples, be that as it may.
Yeah, and one thing that, you know, kind of would be interesting, you know, it goes back to something Reese said actually when we had him on, that in his conversations with various other outside groups, how they see 40K and just wargaming in general evolving, you know, this is becoming a widely known and widespread hobby in a lot of ways, not just playing, but also viewing. And when we get to, I mean, shit, we're talking about, didn't the owner of the founder of Riot Games once weighed in as to a sportsmanship question at LVO?
It happened.
That was years ago. So what are we talking about now if something happens? You know,
it wasn't years ago. That was literally,
it was
just
2 years ago.
Wait, yeah, it was 2 years ago. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I'm not saying it was 5 years ago, but the world moves fast, right? Yeah. And, you know, this isn't the days where there were two separate worlds where it was like 40K was the casual competitive thing. And then you had the arrogant pricks over at Privateer who were like, yeah, this is the war. War Machines is a war game for people who don't want to be nice. And of course, we all know what happened with that. Whoever's playing War Machine, you have fun with that. You by yourself in a dark room.
It's
a one person player base.
I don't care. We're going to have the idea of centralizing a registration for yellow cards is not that hard. Like Alex said, Magic's done it forever, but it will require the people running 40K, I use no names, to be a lot more hands on with how they control events. That's the only problem I see. It's not a problem, that's a hurdle. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. I feel like you have more to add to this discussion, Michael.
No, I mean, I think Vince has proved.
Mike, leave it all out there. Leave it all out there, man.
Leave it all out there.
Whatever misgivings you have, throw it out.
I don't have any misgivings, to be 100% honest. I think Vince is right in the sense we have the technology. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
God fucking damn it.
We have the ability to be very centralized, and like you said, the individuals who have a certain influence in 40K, they can very much organize it as such, so there can be a running list at least for major events where the individuals who have had yellow cards in previous major and GTs, they are known actors, and therefore they are put on notice, and X amount of yellow cards will get you banned from specific events. That is totally doable. In retrospect, I don't know why I was thinking it's a few years away. They can do it in 6 months. It would just take a little bit of effort and then call it a day.
Because BCP already has kind of the zeitgeist of the time. All of us are tracked, right? When you go to an event run by BCP, you sign up as a unique user, and then that data is imported into whatever FLG uses to put the numbers out. So it's not like we have to worry about people getting yellow cards allocated to them that aren't theirs.
Well, that's a good point.
the ability to do this is not far off. It's like it, like all questions, it's a question of will. And is there enough impetus in the community to make this a thing? And I don't think there is right now. Like, I think people are still getting used to any kind of consequences at all for improper behavior at events. I think we're still on kind of the, what you would call the socialization stage of the code of conduct, where people are still working to internalize it, if not pushing back against it because they got used to getting away with bullshit. Again, I use no names. And this will take time. It's just a question of how, and there's, it, they're not really on a clock. I'm not implying that this is going to kill 40K because I'm not Chicken Little and the sky is most definitely not falling. 40K is in as good a place as I think probably it's ever been, if not the best it's ever been. And this is kind of become, this is the adult phase, right? This is where you become a grown-up activity in the eyes of the rest of the world. All right. The last thing we want to get to tonight is a smaller event out of our own backyard, Antioch, California, basically the extremity of what we're allowed to call the Bay Area, even though some people would properly call it the Valley. Won by friend of the program, Mr. Brian Pullen, 5-0 with his Tau list. I'm not going to say that we have it. For those who don't remember, Brian Pullen is one of the guys who was on stream at LVO. I believe he was 5-0 in that game and lost to Mr. It wasn't Michael Schneider. It was the mechanic. Who's the guy that brought Mechanicus and Guard? Do you guys remember?
No.
Nope.
He's a Midwest player. I should know his name. But anyway, other notables at the event, friends of the show, Paul McKelvey coming in 6th with his Tau. Anthony D'Amore, 9th with Deathwatch. He is going to ride or die with Deathwatch. I honestly think he doesn't care anymore. the world famous Israel Bohalil Sanchez.
Oh, is he?
Coming out of retirement to go 3-2 with his Tau. A lot of people we know. See, this is what I love about local events is when you could just watch all your friends beat the ever-loving shit out of each other.
Oh, yeah.
But this is one of those moments where we're gonna add this to the information we got out of Flying Monkeys to kind of just talk about where the thing is, where the world is going. With Tau, Dark Eldar, Necrons, and Custodes coming in 1-4. And the way I understand it, that was pure Custodes, as our friend Anthony did play him, and it was a very close loss. We were told that Custodes probably can't hack it at the elite level. However, you know, Mr. Bridger Han, I cannot speak to his games, but I do know he is a skilled player. I've kind of disagreed that they can't handle it just because of how efficient the bikes are, the jet bikes.
And also that shiny new tank that is like blasting people left and right.
That's true, but the Caladius kind of relies on everything around it being dangerous. And it also relies on having that -1 to hit kind of standing on it. Because otherwise it's still just a Lehman Russ with a 5-up invul. And believe me when I tell you, a 5-0 would be nice, but it wouldn't make a huge difference.
I mean, that Lehman Russ also is hitting on fucking 2s and has a 60-inch range. It's ain't bad.
I mean, I can do hitting on 2s, re-rolling 1s from 90 inches, but, you know.
All right, we're not going to argue about this. The point being is...
I'm just saying the 60 inches in 40K is really not that far.
All right, right? Fair point. But I think it's also the ability to fly, because you can basically hide that and also move without move a full 14 inches without having any effect on your shooting. So
that is probably the biggest thing, is ignoring the heavy penalty.
Yeah, and the fact that he can basically hide behind like the magic boxes or like a good piece of line of sight blocking terrain, and then so you cannot be taken out turn one, and then moving in a perfect firing position at the bottom of the turn or the top of the turn, depending on how you go first or second.
Right, and then it's not like you can use throwaway shooting to get rid of Adeptus Infantry. Like,
you have to
focus your whole army on like small pieces of a Custodes list. Like, okay, here's 700 points. Please all kill that 4-man unit. Here's another 700 points. You all kill that 4-man unit. Oh shit, it didn't work.
And, oh shit, I am out of shooting. I think Custos are pretty good in the game right now. We're also seeing Tau making a strong resurgence. Chaos is also very potent, and Dark Eldar, dude, they have all the tools, as Jim agreed to my statement, surprisingly.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. This has been a recurring thing for 2 months now. Basically, we've been hearing that Dark Eldar are just on the precipice of dominating the competitive world. Like they're right. It's a tide that hasn't crested yet, right?
Yeah. Well, they have all the tools. I think the elimination of the Castellan, even though this is several months in already, has really put the meta in a position where it can evolve and change. Beforehand, it was heavily ossified, for lack of a better term.
That's a great word. Thank you for finding a way to use that word.
You're welcome. That's your SAT word for the day.
Exactly. Yeah. The more you know.
and now you have a lot more free-flowing options simply because you can bring units that before were just like cannot include because it will get deleted turn one.
Yeah. And also like the Imperial soup lists really have fallen off kind of hard, right?
Not really. I mean, when you go to these majors, when you go to these GTs, you're still going to see your, you know, like we talked about before during BAO, you know, you're going to see your Jeff Robinsons and your Brandon Grants who honestly don't give a shit about mono faction. They're going for the gold, you know?
Yeah. Imperial soup is still going to be very good, as Alex alluded to. It's just there's a lot more diversity into it. Before, Imperial soup literally meant as many of you as you can bring, a Wervin to take advantage of the freaking artillery battalion.
Of the double tap rule, yeah.
Yeah, the double tap rule, and a Castellan. Rinse and repeat. Now it's, I'm bringing freaking, the Rusty 17. No, I'm bringing a truck ton of guard and some custodes. No, I'm bringing this. You have a lot more diversity. And the more diversity in the meta, the better and healthier the meta is.
Now, Alex, you mentioned earlier that you're working on some things for your Necrons. Have you been studying any of the lists that you see coming in, you know, third through sixth? Like, they're not winning events, but people are having success. Do you think Necrons are as far out as they used to be now that the Castellan is gone?
No, I don't think that they're as far back. They're unlikely to really win a GT. You know, we've talked about and had on the show and reviewed lists by, you know, Antonio and, Chad. They've been doing great. And, I do talk to those two players in particular pretty frequently. And, you know, a lot of lists for Necrons are rather similar right now. There's not a lot of variety with what works, what the secret sauce is. But it has been slowly starting to change with the resurgence of some of these more elite armies. So, you know, Destroyers, which were all the craze in 8th, disappeared. And now people are starting to really take another look now that a lot of these elite armies are existing, because Destroyers just have the tools to take them off the table.
Well, they're a light vehicle slaughter factory is what Destroyers are.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still of the mind that Tesla is king until I fight against Custodes like I have for the last several weeks and then just get like worked super hard because 2-up armor. But, you know, there's a lot of there's less variety in the type of lists that, you know, are doing well with Necrons. But I think that, the mono faction changes, and I've talked about this before on the show, but, you know, the mono faction changes are really helpful and wholesome for a lot of those armies that were, you know, typically considered lower tier.
Yeah. Totally agree with that one.
Yeah. So, you know, it's helpful that these changes have been made. And we'll just have to see, we'll just have to see everything moving forward. You know, I'm like I mentioned earlier, I don't expect any codexes for the rest of this year. But what I'm really interested in is those new Warzone picks, because they already said that there were going to be multiples. If we can recall between the books, those books leading up for Vigilus, they outright said very early on when those books came out, they're like, you're not going to see any Dark Eldar. You're not going to see any Necrons. You're not going to see any Tau at all in this whatsoever. You know, you're not going to see any Custodes, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to get to them, because they said that they have specialist detachments for every army, like on the ready, and they're just going to pop up in these books.
I mean, that makes perfect sense too. It's a wonderful way for them to introduce new layers to the meta and to the competition, and also for them to make a lot of money, because this is a business after all.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. And as we've said, they have to be, and we'll probably end on this vignette of a conversation, you have to be really freaking careful how you add these the special detachments. Like, they've already done very well not breaking the game with anything they've added. Yes, the Emperor's Wrath was good for a while. Yes, the Soul Forge Pact is coming up now. Somebody just ran the fucking Vitrix Guard. I never thought I'd see that. But, you know, what are we going to see out of the Mechanicus? What are we going to see out of Craft World? That's not the stupid ass, what's the one with the Wraith, the Wraith host that will never be used ever? You know, what I'm excited. Like, yes, I'm excited. I'm also tentatively worried, because this is always the question of like, shit, we're going back to formations, aren't we?
I understand your concern with that. I certainly don't think that that's the case. I mean, that was the problem when these things first came out. Everyone was saying, oh, these are formations. Formations are back. Oh my God, formations are back. Holy crap. Did you know that formations are back? And they're not back. They're not a thing. These are not formations, you know? Do they add more? To what you can bring and how your army works and the synergy that's involved. You know, they're not overpowered. They're not something that's really all that useful for everyone's play style. They're just a new way to play the game. And I think the more new ways there are to play existing armies, the more, you know, not only will your customer base continue to increase or, you know, the return on investment for both players and, of course, Games Workshop, but, like, it's helpful for the game. It's helpful for the meta. It's helpful for everyone involved.
Yeah, and it's never a bad thing for them to introduce new ways of people using some of the lesser known units. Like, whoever before this, did anyone in their mind think they would ever see Ogryns being good?
I mean,
how many years were they a joke?
I remember when Ogryns were kind of nuts.
When?
The Ogryn bodyguards, the 2-up invul?
Yeah.
When was what, like a year ago?
Yeah, it was a year ago.
Like, exactly. Like, how long have we been in this?
I think he's referencing pre 8th edition.
I'm just saying, like, this is a cool mechanic to give love to maybe units that aren't being played as much, because they have access to the same information we do. It's not like they can't just assign an intern to watch BCP or Tabletop TO and just go, oh, wow, look at these units nobody's using and we're not really selling a lot of. Maybe we can, you know, let's play test out a couple ways to make this more viable. I just think that, and I want to applaud Games Workshop for this, that their playtesting has benefited the community and the game a lot. And if they keep going the way they're going, I am confident in how they're approaching how we're going into the future. I can't fucking talk tonight. You guys hear this shit?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we agree. You can't speak tonight.
That's getting edited.
Aw. Yeah, we gotta put Vincent Rice.
I don't even know what that means.
What the fuck? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like when a phone was broken like 10 years ago, like you put it in rice?
Yeah.
And
That's really? A funny pun, really? Alex. I think it's cute.
It's not even a pun. It's just a reference to something. Oh, my Lord. Okay. Apparently we got Grandpa Morgado over here.
Well, I think it's...
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I normally just broke my phone a different way. But all right. Let's go ahead and we'll wrap it up right there.
Oh, God.
Let's see. I have no idea what just happened.
I don't know.
Schwartz and Alex, go ahead and sign off.
Have a wonderful night, everyone. Ah, shit.
Smell you later.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Have a good week.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.